Hi, and welcome to another episode of Tales from a Vet Tech with me, Tabitha Kucera. Today, I'm speaking to the Trap King himself, Sterling Davis, all about how randomly volunteering at a shelter to kill some time while he was on tour resulted in him leaving his rap career to follow his new passion of TNR, Trap Neuter Return, and cats. We talk all about what led him to starting his own nonprofit, some of the challenge he's faced, and more. Hi, Sterling. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
I met Sterling. Where did we fucking meet? I think it was a CatCon, and we immediately were like, I love you. Right. We are best friends now. So for some of you who may not be familiar with Sterling Trap King Davis, he is an awesome animal welfare advocate, especially for cats and trap neuter and return. But for everyone, can you tell me a little bit about you and your path, because you have a very interesting one, and how you ended up finding your passion for TNR and your amazing love for cats?
Thank you. Thank you. So it is a interesting journey on how I got here to the world of community cat care and TNR. I've actually been a rapper, an entertainer my whole life. I've been doing music and entertaining since I was able to talk. So I've always been doing that. And it was actually, but I always loved cats. Even since I was little, I loved cats. I never knew about TNR, never knew about rescue. And in between one of my music tours, like trying to find something to do until I go on my next music tour, which was with Tech N9ne. I don't know if y'all heard of Tech N9ne.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tech N9ne is like, if you do rap or underground rap or any of that independent rap, Tech N9ne is a big deal. Like, he's a big deal. And I was about to go on another tour with him, and I was trying to find something to do. Saw an ad in the papers to help out with cats at a rescue. And I'm like, this is cool. No responsibility. I can just go. It's not
do your
real
thing
heavy.
And leave.
Yeah, I got cat. I had a cat at the time named Rick James. So it was like, oh, this would be easy. I just go play with some cats till I go back on tour. It'll be something to do. I don't get in trouble or spend money. And I went and applied, and I did horrible at the interview. I was playing with the cats, not answering the questions because they had me in a room full of cats. Like, why
you
would
were distracted.
You do that? Right. And I'm cuddling with them, and they asking me questions. I'm not answering the questions right. And so they was like, we want to hire you, because they had never seen somebody like me with cats like that before. And I didn't understand what they was talking about until I started working there. And I would see more and more, like, it was in TNR community cat care, just was not any black or brown people really doing it. It was middle-aged white women. Like, all, that was it. And that's who was training me. And so, you know, after a couple of weeks, I asked them, like, hey, like, where's all the black people at? Where's all the guys? Where's all the men? Like, it's no men of no color out here. It's just y'all.
Yeah, because you were new to it, and you're like, I love cats. Lots of people love cats. What the hell's going on? I'm curious. Right. Let me know.
And I knew I was weird. I'm the weirdo in my circle. Like, I always dress different. I paint my nails. I was the weird kid in my circle, so I knew I was weird for liking cats, but I didn't know it was everywhere. It's just completely uncommon for men or a man of color to deal with cats and volunteer and do stuff like that. So I ended up staying, and literally I changed my whole path after I saw just how bad it was. Like,
I did not realize that you jumped that much, because I know some of your path and all that stuff, but I didn't realize you were just like, I did this. I met cats. I worked in a shelter for a few weeks. And I was like, you were like, I love rapping, but also this is my thing now. I'm just going to jump into it, which I love. I think that's great.
Right. It was because it's like, for me, I always wanted to live a life of service. Like, I want to do some, I want
to
change
feel
the world.
Fulfilled. Right.
Yeah, I want to do so. That was the reason I went in the military, because of that, because I want to help, and I want to travel the world and help people, meet different cultures and spread love. That's like my main thing. So I think that with animal rescue, like once I saw that, it was like, oh my God. Like I felt like everything I had done in the military and everything I had been doing with music was to deliver this message. It was like all of my stuff that I like doing had a purpose and a place, like a good purpose. Cause I'm the type, if it don't have a good purpose, if I don't love it and believe in it, I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to give it my all. It has to have meaning to it. It has to have a purpose and some love behind it, or I'm just like, nope. So when I saw that, you can believe, like you can imagine my friends when I call them and like, yo, I'm not coming back on the tour. They're like,
no, that was probably a challenging, I mean, to be fair, although you found a new thing that you love. And again, everything kind of fell in for you, had that eye-opening moment. We've all had those with animal, because I know there's this podcast is geared toward animal professionals, but right. I'm sure they were like, and also you love rapping, not that you could not do it anymore, but that's a huge, how did they take that?
it was crazy, because they like, when they ask you, okay, did you hit the lottery, like why are you not coming back on tour, and I'm like, nah, kind of into this cat rescue thing, and they like, oh, you done lost your mind, you want to go broke. That's what you want to do. That's what you're
saying.
They were
looking out for you. They meant well.
Yeah. They've been, and it was, you know, even like for a minute, some of my friends was talking about doing an intervention on me with it. Like it was wild, because I was letting go. I was at the point where you really want to get to be going on tour with Tech N9ne and doing the stuff I was about to do.
It's You've been working you hard for a long time to get to that place. Like, and now that you're there, they're like, hey, maybe let's not jump into a different career right now.
Right. But it was even in the music thing. One thing that helped me too is that I was already dealing with a lot of the politics of music that come with it, that I did. Like I said, I dress different. I paint my nails. It, you know, a hardcore, it's hard to be a hardcore rapper that want to paint his nails and play with cats all the time. And
no, I was dealing
with that in rap already. So a lot of stuff, it just seemed like it was pointing towards this. Like, even with my music, the songs that I was making, they was weird. It was sounding like Jagged Little Pill to a hip hop beat. Like, you know, my song content, you know what I mean? It was just different. So I was ready to make a change, and it seemed like when I spent at the shelter and learning about TNR with those ladies, it was easy to dive in, because it was like, I can't believe that it's just one demographic. I can't believe that all the help that's needed out of all the cats, you have one demographic that's burning out and giving all their money doing all of that. And it's like, not only would it help with ideas and help for the cats, but it's therapeutic.
Yeah.
So it's like a whole different world where I was like, this is it. It's like with a cat now. This is my life now. Like I'm in it. I'm here.
So once you made that decision, that eye-opening moment for you, how did you just stay with that rescue for a minute, or what were kind of the next steps as far as, because obviously you have built, just like in your rap career, right? You have built yourself up as this amazing animal advocate, and you use a lot of those skill sets that, like you mentioned, being an entertainer, working in the military, to help spread your message of not just, again, caring for cats and TNR and the lack of diversity in animal welfare, but also just being kind to people in general. So what were your next steps once you were like, all right, I'm making this choice that it's done now. Now let me do whatever.
Yeah. So my next, after I realized, okay, this is it, I'm going to do TNR, I'm going to stay and do this, I started training. I stayed with this organization. I stayed with the organization in Atlanta for a while, and they run the county shelters, Lifeline Animal Project. And they trained me. I learned a lot. They would send me out to different conferences, best friends conferences and stuff, so that I learn about TNR. Mickey Blair, an amazing TNR woman who taught me, took me under her wing. And so I learned, I just got all the knowledge. And at first it was like a contest or something. Like, I wanted to go out and trap all the cats I could, like every night, because they gave me like a vehicle, the keys to the clinic, and all these traps. So I could just go out all night. So I'm like I'm about to go out every night and trap like 50 cats. Like, I'm about to do it. So every morning, the vet's coming in and they load it. Cats load. I got the paperwork and everything on the trap, the street name, everything. I got them loaded up for when they come in. And finally, it was like, Sterling, you need to focus on educating. Like, you overload the clinic up here. Right. Like, you need to focus.
You found mentors. You learned more. Right, and now you're at a... And also, I'm sure they saw your amazing potential as far as the way you communicate, the way you could spread a message, because teaching and educating and entertaining is not everyone's skill set.
Right.
So you obviously had that skill set, and thankfully you were empowered by the people you were around, which makes me so happy, because I feel like we would have got Sterling a little later in our beautiful animal welfare world if you weren't empowered. But when they were like, hey, so you should focus on education, is that where... Because he has branded himself, because he's amazing, as Trap King. Is that where Trap King came from? Or
that's
how did that
Trap
come about?
King, that's when Trap King started, because it was like, hey, you should, you know, you going out on your own, trapping all these cats is great. You trapping a million of them, that's awesome. But teaching people and getting more people engaged is going to be a big deal. And you communicate well. So that's where Trap King came from. And I was at a conference. I think it was a best friend conference, but I was going to different classes about starting the community, a TNR community care project, winter shelters, just learning different TNR cat rescue stuff. And I thought of it there. It was like, man, and it because rap uses the term Trap King so much. I actually don't even like the term Trap King in rap, crazy enough. Because what it stood for something kind of bad. It was like glorifying the main tough guy in the, you know, like Scarface. Scarface would be considered a Trap King. So it was glorified. But I was sitting there thinking, like, you know, it sucks that people glorify that. And I would be,
how can
you know,
I make this language work for me?
How can
and
it
change
work?
That? Like, yeah.
And it was Trap. It was Trap, Neuter, Return.
Right.
And I was like, I've been trapping all these cats. I'm like the king of Trap, Neuter, Return. And it was like, ding. I was like, oh, Trap King. I was like, I don't even like that word that much. But I was like, no, that's going to get different demographics. That's going to get different attention to see this. And I literally sat there thinking like, oh, my God, I gotta think of like a hood Hello Kitty, like a logo.
Oh,
look
I
like
love
a,
that.
I was like, I got to. This is too much. It's too many ideas at once. I was like, oh my God, I gotta do something. So like literally at that conference, I thought of Trap King and I started calling myself the Trap King, like, and break it down. And it was working because soon as I had, and the first logo I had didn't even have an ear tip. It was just a regular cat. But then I put the ear tip on the logo and it took off. Like people would see me in the streets and be like, yo, you a rapper? And I look at my shirt like,
oh, just kind of starting a conversation,
right,
which is
like,
amazing.
Yeah. And it would start the conversation. Yeah. People would be like, you're a rapper. And I'd be like, nah, I rescue cats. And they'd be like, cats? Like, meow? Like, and so I'm sitting there talking to somebody who would never even talk about cats or nothing. I'd have sat there and talked to them. And they're like, I never even heard of that. That's crazy. And I'm like, oh, my God, I got to wear this logo every day. Like, it's working. Like, I can't. I'm talking to somebody about TNR every day that didn't know about, outside of the fact that I'm talking to other people that do it.
Right.
So that's what it was. It was like, I realized that was my niche, is to deliver it, to get people engaged. And then too, like you were saying, because everybody don't like being loud and in front of a camera doing all, most rescue people are on the ground doing the work. They don't have time to be like, look at me on social media. So
and a lot of them in vet med and shelter med are introverted, understandably. And again, there's that whole thing, which thankfully we're understanding isn't the most effective message, but I fucking hate people. So I'm going to work with animals. And I'm like, hey guys, we have to do, like, as a vet tech, I have to go in. Your dog just was hit by a car. I have to ask you CPR, DNR. Like, we have to have really serious, intense, kind conversations with people. And in TNR as well, you are legit sometimes going into people's yards with consent, y'all. That's a big...
Yeah, right.
That's a big... Please don't go in someone's backyard, you guys, especially in some states. Like, let's just not do that. Yeah. But I think, like you said, you... have those skill sets, because I remember we were talking about this before I started recording, but I educate, I'm a speaker, I'm very extroverted. Me and Sterling have very similar personality traits. We love people, and we've worked really hard on our communication skills because we've been thrown into challenging situations various times. And you learn as you go. And it's funny because he was talking about how he's an entertainer, and of course he's spreading tons of education, but it put things in perspective for me. And I was like, yeah, when I'm educating, I'm a teacher, of course, but also there is 100% an entertainer aspect, because people always tell me that they're super awake because I speak at conferences where there's lots of CE. So hours and hours and hours. So I understand why people get tired, but people are like, I could hear you speak for 3 more hours and these things that I never thought. I'm like, there's a lot of entertainment factors that are included into being a good speaker. And I never even put those two things together until we talked. And like you said, you are amazing at spreading the message. You're amazing at starting conversations with strangers, which is another skill set. I know that's not everyone's favorite thing. So you started Trap King, and then did you immediately start social media and a website, or how did that look as far as like spreading the word past Atlanta?
It was crazy. Like I would recommend anybody, if you go start a nonprofit, really do your research first. I dove in heart first. And did so much wrong.
Like, that is a wonderful way to say it. That is perfect.
Doing like I dove in hard. Like literally, I was like, I told my buddy who I was roommate with, like, I'm about to sell everything. I'm about to live out my vehicle. I'm about to live this life. I am doing it. My whole thought process was getting off the grid and living this different life. I didn't want to be in entertainment no more. I was getting away from all of it in my mind. So it was a trip to get to this point where it was like, I was getting away from music and the entertainment, the politics and all of that. But it was like, man, if I use some of that entertainment stuff to deliver this message, it's going to do what I want it to do. Like, I should make it louder. So, because I was never going to do a cat rap before. I never had any intentions of doing a cat rap. It was almost like a mockery of my real music. So,
right.
But I went for it all. Like, I was like, I'm going to sell everything. I'm taking Trap King all across the country. I'm going to spread it. I'm going to live it. Like,
what year was this? When did you?
This was 2017. So I have worked. I have been working for the county shelter in Atlanta for about 5 years. After 5 years, I went on my own. I started Trap King Humane, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to afford rent in cat surgery. I couldn't do that no more. So that's what was.
You just started a nonprofit. And like you said, there's a lot going in heart first. I think that's a perfect way to word it. You're well intentioned, but like you said, there's some problems with that you learned about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because a lot of people want to help, and finding your niche is so important. You probably don't need to be the nonprofit. You probably are good with fostering. You're probably good with adopting. You're probably good with TNR. It's so many things that you're good at, and then you want to be around the board and understand how it works before you just jump out there. Somebody has to handle the taxes and the paperwork. At first, it was just, like I said, I just dove out there heart first, so everybody that was helping me was other rescue people, and we just, meetings would be like, I love cats, we gotta save, okay, let's go. And then it's like, okay, where's the organization to all of this stuff? What are we gonna, so... I would recommend doing the research and figuring out your niche in it. That was, like I said, I just dove in heart first and found it. And, you know, it took a while to find it. That's my thing, is more so than just trapping 1,000 cats every night, the education, the spreading the word, and then helping with the compassion fatigue and burnout side of it too, because I said, a lot of the people that's on this, that's doing rescue, they don't have the time to do that. They're not patting themselves on the back. And so that's something I wanted to do. I wanted to make sure that everybody doing it, they know they're a trap king or a trap queen, and you need it. What you're doing is good. You're like a superhero. You know, I want people.
You want to reinforce and validate that, because I think sometimes all of us, even me, who has both of us have amazing support systems and we've learned over the years, but like, I feel alone a lot. And I'm sure you do too. And some, there's a lot of TNR people, animal welfare people who unfortunately may not have that support system. And when they feel alone, whoo, that is, you know, that is challenging. So the fact that I think we're both big about how can we support and reinforce the people that we work with and be like, hey, I know you don't hear this, but you're fucking amazing.
Right, right. You got to, I mean, it's needed. It's needed because you, and I get, obviously, you know, me and you, we get love. We get people, yeah. I could go online and people are like, hey, you're doing great. You're doing the Lord's work or you're doing awesome things for animals and thank you. And I get that love, but I'm human and I know, you know, out of all of those 20,000 positive messages, yeah, I get the one bad one and I'm like, I'm ready to break down and cry. So for people that's, like I said, not sitting on social media and getting all of that, if they just putting in their own money, they going out, they doing the work and they not getting a lot of that love and somebody just walk up and say, well, that's nothing but two cats. I trapped 20. It's like, that's
not a competition, you, everybody.
Right. It's not a competition. And that's enough to break somebody down. So I've learned that's a big part of what we do is helping not just the animals, but the people that help the animals as well. That's like a huge component that I've gotten more into as I've gone on.
And I didn't realize that I thought the RV was a newer thing in the last few years. I didn't realize you were like, fuck it. I want to do this. I'm going to just start, not just in Atlanta. I'm going to just start doing this and traveling immediately. So props to you, because that is a very, that's a choice, Sterling. That's a choice. Yeah. I think that's an amazing choice. And as far up again, you were starting Trap King on social media and essentially just being like, both of us are very vulnerable and out there. We put ourselves out there a lot, which has bad and good, which we'll talk about. But
right.
So you started putting yourself out there. You started the nonprofit. And then how exactly did you start building traction? Because obviously that took, just like with Trips and Chatter, you know, 5 years ago, I was, you know, it was a challenge. And now, thankfully, I've worked my ass off and people are aware of me and I'm getting
everybody know you now.
Oh, stop it. Yeah. But how world, did you
everybody
get? Oh, you're so sweet. I love you. See, we all support each other, guys. It's beautiful. But how did you, like, what did those first few years look like? Like, real talk, man, because that must have been challenging as hell.
It was tough. I dove in heart first. So a lot of stuff I wasn't thinking about. I was thinking about helping cats and spreading the word. I didn't know, like I said, the human aspect, hitting that wall, the burnout, the compassion fatigue, and then certain areas and not being accepted because of how I look. And
unfortunately, I know you have had a lot of that happen.
And I wasn't expecting it. I assumed it would be some of it, but I wasn't expecting it to that
extent.
Degree.
Because you're I love cats. Yeah. You love cats. Yes, I'm a black man. All right.
But that was the first thing, which it was some good in it, but it was weird at first because I spent most of my first years, it was like proving to people that I'm doing what I'm saying I'm doing and I should be in this space. So it was a lot of people seeing me online and liking stuff that I put on social media, which that was cool, but I don't consider myself an influencer. Like grew up, I'm born at a time there wasn't cell phones or Facebook or it wasn't none of that. When I was in high school, I didn't have a cell phone. There wasn't no Facebook or Instagram. So I don't consider myself an influencer or good at that stuff. But people would like some of my release videos. They would see me release the cats.
And not a lot of people were creating that, because I don't consider you an influencer either, because that's a whole separate podcast, everybody. But
right.
But you're an educator and you put yourself out there and you were just like, I'm going to put out what I'm doing to help spread the word. And people were like, and like you said, you're entertaining, you're fun, you make it relatable and practical, which is a huge part of teaching. And you're like, shit, people are liking this. I'm getting a lot of followers. This is getting me some attention, but this is awesome because now I can use that to advocate and care for more cats and humans.
Right, right. And that's literally what it was. Like after I started, you know, seeing online, but that would bring a lot of the good and a lot of the bad.
Yeah. You know what
I'm saying? A lot of people.
The more you put yourself out there, it comes. Yeah.
Yeah, I've had people say some crazy things. I had police called on me before. I had guns pulled out on me before, and it's been a learning process, and it helped me each time. It made me better, and then again, it helps me with helping other people with certain situations that I've been in. I'm able to be like, okay, this is probably what you're dealing with. So, and a race thing, like I said, that's the elephant in the room. It's a big thing. And either it's me going in a neighborhood that I'm not familiar with, or the people in this neighborhood aren't familiar with somebody that look like me, or it's my cat ladies and volunteers going to a neighborhood where they're not familiar or people don't look like them. And it works. It goes on both sides. It's dealing with that so much really put me in a position to say, okay, let's bridge this gap. Yeah. Like we got to bridge this gap. So it's so much. It's the cats. It's the rescue. It's the people. But it's also turned into a unity thing. It's also bringing people together in different ways that I didn't even think I was going to do. Like I'm in an interracial relationship, and that's something that, you know, is new to some people still, even though this is 2023, somehow people, it's still new to people. But so much of what I do, I want to unite and bring people together as well as help animals and shine a light on the rescue people that's too tough and too strong. Because all my cat ladies, they like, no, I don't put no camera in my face. Don't record me. I'm doing the work, Sterling. I do the work. And I'm like, I know, but let me highlight you. Let me get you some money.
And that's so funny because I think so many of us in animal welfare, because we're so insecure ourselves, which I've gotten a lot better. All y'all know, I share my mental health journey stuff with everybody all the time. And now I can take a compliment very well. But even just 4 years ago, it can be really challenging to even... And that just says something about the culture we're creating in animal welfare and how we really need to, that's kind of eye-opening. Or for like you said, having the cops called on you, this is a very real problem in America. When sometimes they fucking called you out to help, you go out to help and then they become aggro with you. And you're just like, oh, like I've heard lots, sorry, me and Sterling talk a lot. I'll have him share a few stories because you guys don't have context. Could you share a few stories where you were maybe, again, like they actually call you out for help and then they become conflicted or you're put in an uncomfortable situation and how you've handled that. And that's one thing I love about you because you, again, you have been in a lot of challenging situations as a cat rescuer, but also as a Black man. And you share that. And I think that is so important because although it is 2023 and we should all be aware, but let's be honest, especially in, this is real talk, guys, in the animal welfare community, especially TNR, it's a lot of older white women and some of them we all have biases, but woo, it's a whole nother, and then feral cat, that's a whole nother thing. So, and you've been so amazing at like being patient, even in situations where I'll be honest, I'm a good person. I don't know how you've done it. You're better than me, bud. Like seriously. But could you share some examples of some difficult situations you've been into and how you've learned from it and how you handled those for people who probably are listening and have had to deal with those things as well?
Oh yeah. I've like you said, a ton of them. I could probably go on forever. I will say this, first and foremost, you got to know as rescue people, we got to know what we do is unique. It's needed. It's helpful. And a lot of people just won't understand. They'll get, and people get angry or against what they don't know or understand. So we got to be patient. We got to be patient and know that what we're doing is ultimately to help the animals, to help the cats, to educate people. And like I said, people don't know. So I've had a ton of situations where, like, one of the most common things that happen is my volunteers, and I have this happen in various cities. My volunteers are going out, they feed in colonies, they manage in a colony in a black or brown neighborhood, and it's off to the side, but gotten to the point where the people in the community start to harass them. And I can almost pinpoint how it started, why it started, when it started. And this is something I tell folks all the time. The bumper stickers on your vehicle. Mm-hmm. When you're going into so many of my volunteers that have political or religious bumper stickers on their vehicle. And what they don't understand is when those people walk up and they see the bumper stickers on that car, before they start talking about the cats, they're going to address that religious or political view on the back of that car. And that determines the conversation before anything is had. And they can't understand why they misfire. And it's like, I'm helping these cats and I'm doing this. And it's like, why are you over here? And they're thinking, I'm helping the cats, but somebody's aggressive with them. Right.
And that rescue person also, because let's be honest, they may not understand where that person's coming from,
right,
versus where I would most likely understand where that person is coming from. Cause you're like, I'm helping the cats. And that person might be like, a common thing that we always talk about is, I love animals. Both of us do, but I love people. Yeah. And I grew up in East Cleveland, and I know lots of people who are like, they give a fuck more about the cats than they do us. And that is a very real problem. And if that's the way you're approaching it, understandably, I can understand why those humans may feel a little threatened.
Oh, yeah.
So I think having empathy, you know, for both parties, but I'll let you go on. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, like you said, you gotta be able to communicate with the people when you go into different neighborhoods. So you wanna make sure you keep it as positive, as peaceful as possible, and about the cat. Like I said, the bumper stickers, political, religious views. I've had situations where I've taken a volunteer, we go back to a community where they're being harassed, somehow Michael Vick's name come up, and the first thing my volunteer does is, and I'm like, right there, we can't, because what's not understood in the rescue community, it's fine, I understand why it's not understood, but in the black community, people feel as if Michael Vick did something wrong, he served his time, his career is over, and he's done. He shouldn't be ridiculed or punished anymore. So constant going at him, it's already a disconnect. But if you're in rescue, like I'm in rescue, I know, I still want to box this dude. You know, if you're in rescue, you still feel like, screw that.
Right.
But the black community is like, they don't know enough of that to be like, oh yeah, I'm mad. No, they feel like he served his time. Leave him alone. You're being racist now. So just right there, eliminating that conversation, like eliminating that reaction to the Michael Vick comment. Like, I know, but we're not here to talk about it. We're here to rescue the cats and educate the people on community cat care. And the more other stuff you get into makes it difficult, especially coming from us. So a lot of things, one of the main things I learned is to listen and take it in more.
Yeah.
And not do so much of, hey.
Finger pointing. Yeah. You guys would see, like, he's pointing at his finger.
Yeah. I'm doing the finger point move, because we'll do that a lot. And it's not even bad. It's not that we're trying to be extra judgmental or bad. It's just that the average rescuer, we doing this every day, night in and night out. So it's like, in our minds, we like, wow, you don't know this? You don't know that you don't just throw the food out? Like, you should have a feeding time and proper feeding stations. You don't know this, or you don't know what. I had a guy tell me, you know, he got fined because his dog was tethered and he didn't know what tethered meant.
Yeah.
And so it's like the educational part of it.
Instead of saying he's abusing his dog.
Right.
We have to get more contacts and more information. Or I know tons of people who, for example, like, they don't have a cat carrier. So I work with low cost vaccine clinics and making veterinary care more accessible. and they bring the cat in like something that may not be
right.
I've seen a lot of interesting things, but these people love their cats. They don't know about, first off, they may not have the funds for a cat carrier, or, but for me to just be like, what the fuck? Like, that's not helpful. Could I tell them why placing the cat in a bag is maybe not best? But in most cases, they care. They just don't know. They don't have access to leashes. Like, this is very real stuff. Like, definitely.
And I've had to control my reactions because even when I worked at the shelter, it would be like that. You see somebody walking up and they got a cat in, I don't, whatever contraption. And I'm like,
I've seen
oh my
a laundry
God.
Basket a lot, which is actually creative. Right. It's not the worst thing, you know? They mean well. They're just trying to get their cat to you.
And I've tried, the reaction is the thing. You know, how you react to somebody could turn them off forever almost. Like
with your body language. Because you could be like, thank you for coming. But if you're rolling your eyes, your face is tense and your arms are crossed. Guys, that's sending a message.
If you run up like, oh my God, put this cat in here. You get this cat, you can't carry it. Like, oh my God, come on. Like that move is...
Because you already created that. So now if that person has questions or concerns about cats in the future, they're going to be afraid. It's just not, but again, I think sometimes, like you said, it's our involuntary, like we aren't aware of what our body language is doing. And sometimes we are.
You taught me that with the cats, with doing the trapping. I tell everybody all the time, and it's something that is hard to get out of me. But when I catch a cat and I'm walking up to the trap, I'm, oh, hey, how you doing? Look at the little baby. How you doing? And it's like, Sterling, you're probably scared of with the high voice and all of that stuff going on. Just cover the trap up. But but that's like, again, a reaction. It's our...
You're just like, you love them so much.
Right.
Which, again, you're coming from a good place, but I'm like, hey, friend, so that... This cat's already pretty terrified, so let's... But again, you're open to learning. Both of us learn from each other all the time, so...
Yeah.
So obviously we got on a lot of amazing topics, but part of what you also mentioned was essentially when we put ourselves out there, there's tons of conflict with the community, but also even when we're educating and providing resources for people, that brings bad and good, and people sometimes see what we do and assume that we should be able to help everybody every second, all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just, guys, what? that's not real. And I know that you recently started with our friend Sally and a few other people, something called Rescuing the Rescuers, because mental health is huge in animal welfare. But do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I think it's so great.
Yes. So a friend of mine named Julie that lives in Chicago, we used to talk about fixing the fixers. And we used to always use that statement, fix the fixers. And it's because of, we would always say, if the compassion fatigue and burnout isn't just coming from the animals that we can't help or we can't do enough for, when we see the eyes bulging out or the mange, things like that. Like, it doesn't just come from that. It comes from what we do or don't do or say or don't say to one another in rescue. And so that's something that I learned quick, because at first, like I said, it was just, I'm trap king, I'm running, I'm gonna catch all the cats, I'm about to catch 10,000 cats this year, like I'm just gonna do it. But it's so much more to it than that. And like the burnout of compassion fatigue, that's what Rescuing the Rescuers is about. It's about fixing the fixers, because you hit that wall, and it's slowing us down because we don't have people to talk to. Like, you need like acceptance from your peers and being able to talk to somebody that's doing or in the environment that you is so important, and it can help out a lot. It's been, like you said earlier, you felt alone like that. I've been out late at night returning a cat to a place I don't want to return this cat to. There's no place else better for this cat to go.
You're doing the best with what you can. Yeah.
Right. And I'm laying on the ground opening this trap and I'm crying, letting this cat out. And I'm thinking, my God, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm sad. I need to talk to somebody. That's what Rescuing the Rescuers is, because we out doing that. And it's a free group on Facebook. We have professional counselors that you can talk to as well. But I'm always on there. Sally, other TNR cat rescue people on there to talk. So you could speak with someone that's doing the same thing. You could talk with a professional counselor, but it's a safe space. And it's something that, like, since I saw the woman, Mickey Blair, that trained me, I watched her burn out.
Yeah.
Since I saw that, that's something that I've been trying to understand more, and me hitting that wall myself. That was literally how this thing got started. Sally, who I work with, she was from Mission Meow, who I work yes. with. She literally helped me through a time where I hit the wall. Just this past Christmas, I was going through a loss in the family. And again, so much stuff going on in rescue. I hit that wall and it was tough. And, you know, her being there, my buddy Cowboy Bob being there, Michelle from Milo Sanctuary, that's, you know, people that's all in the group, they helped me. They helped me get through it. And it was just, I was stressed. And that's such a big deal. Rescue and volunteering can be therapeutic and helpful to people, but we got to do it the right way. We got to be able to take care of ourselves. And that's what Rescue and the Rescue is about, which is one of the biggest things I'm proud of. I did a lot of stuff, but this is something that I'm really proud of, because it's, I think it's going to be helpful. I already see it helping people.
Yeah, I think just people knowing they're not alone. Because I think in vet med, of course, there's a very big problem. There's a very big problem in every aspect of anyone's job. But right. in animal welfare or just any job where you're caregiving. And I think with TNR and community cats, and even sometimes in a rescue setting where you have less exposure to lots of other people, or like you said, you may be the only, I know tons of community cat caregivers who they're the only ones that they know that takes care of that colony in their backyard, and they don't know any other people that do. So when they go on vacation and have a friend stop over to feed at the scheduled times, their friend is like, what the fuck, dude? Like, they just don't, they don't get it. And, you know, it can get it, like, again, your friends were coming from a good place, which, to be fair, I understand where they were going.
Right.
Where you're like, so I'm super successful. I want, which I'm so glad you did, but that is a very, that was a scary yeah. jump, man. You're brave. You're brave as fuck. Yeah. And it worked out. You're getting
crazy. I'm yeah. brave or crazy.
I'm going to go with brave. But obviously you're getting the word out. And I think that's a big part. Something that I love about you, like, obviously you're educating people, but you're honestly genuine and not judgmental, and we're all on the same level. Even though you're amazing, and if you had a bit of a big head, I would understand, but you don't. Y'all, we got to compliment him more. He doesn't realize. See, we all have imposter syndrome. It's just yeah. you guys, we all do. None of us think we're good enough, which is a whole nother problem. But
I totally didn't. I was like, I'm not going to be good enough. It was, You accepted me. Other people in this environment accepted me, and being my friend was like a big deal to me, because I didn't even, like I said, heart first.
Yeah.
And I knew I wasn't as knowledgeable as so many other people I was meeting and running into. So, and then putting King on something is a big deal. I've had to explain that so many times. Like, listen, trust me with this. I don't, Trap King didn't come from me saying, I'm the man. I trap more cats than everybody. I'm the best at this. No. That is not what I'm saying. I'm taking pride in what I do. And anybody doing it is the same way. So you a trap queen if you do it, you a trap king. It's not saying I'm the best. Because I've had people say, oh, you call yourself a king. I've been trapping you. And I'm like, probably before I was born. I know. I know. I'm not saying I'm the best. I'm not.
I love it. He hears it so much. He's like, I hear what you're saying.
Right.
That's not what you're creating a narrative. I'm glad we're talking about it. This is what it actually means. This right. is context for you.
I even want to start. I did it when I went to, I had a trip to Greece. Where
oh
we
yeah,
did,
that
did
was amazing.
Yeah. But something I did out there and I want to start doing out here, you know, about what I was just saying, is crowning a trap king or a trap queen of a certain area. Like I crowned a trap king and a trap queen of Greece. And it was like, it was amazing. And they felt good. And all I could think about is the king and the queen who I crowned had been doing way more rescue than me. They done stuff. They was showing me. I was like, oh my God, that's how y'all do that over here? I didn't even, like, wow.
And that's so, also, I think we're really lucky because I know not everyone has this opportunity where we get to travel to other shelters and around the country and meet other people. So not only we're helping to educate, but whoa, have I learned a lot from yes. being able to experience all these. Oh, this shelter is doing this amazing enrichment thing that I would have never thought of. And now I could use that to teach others. And I that's another thing that I think we could all learn so much from each other. And that's definitely not something that I see heavily yeah. promoted in animal welfare.
And that's what I want. It needs to be. It needs. We need each other. We can learn from each other. And there's enough room for oh, all. Oh yeah,
there's more than enough cats, you guys. Obviously, it's
more than enough. Like they gonna be here. So it's. But I. That's been my biggest teacher for real. The only thing that I knew how to do for sure when I came in was run my mouth. And rap. That's probably what I knew for sure. But everything else I've been learning and learning more and more from people. Like, I don't think it's nobody that I haven't learned something from.
Yeah.
Something. Like, and this, and but it starts with the positive energy and being willing to listen and accept it, you know. And that's, I want to always create spaces like that, be it rescuing the rescuers or the dating app. Yeah. You know, whatever, all these rescue people, just a safe space where it's fun and, you know, highlighting positive. We need that more. Definitely highlight. I mean, we got to high five each other for you.
100%.
Definitely got to do that.
And for, because not everyone may be as familiar with trap, neuter, return, and community cat care. So could you share if people, because I know all of you want to, right? If there are people that wanted to learn more about community cats, community cat care, TNR, obviously you have a website, which I'll share in the show notes, but what are some of your favorite resources? Trap so, being approved.
I love the Community Cats podcast, Stacey LeBaron and Neighborhood Cats. They are all, they have, Neighborhood Cats have a ton of information. Alley Cat Allies website is spot on as far as information goes. It's a great resource. You can go to Trap King Humane as well. I'm always, and on my Instagram, I mean, everything is cats and information, but I would definitely say Neighborhood Cats, Community Cats podcast. They do a lot. They actually do a certification process, Community Cats podcast and Neighborhood Cats for TNR. So that's good. And Alley Cat Allies, those are two awesome resources for TNR information. And from any stage too, if you just get started or you kind of in the middle already, inexperienced, either way, like it's definitely good information. And like I said, Trap King, find me. I'm always,
he's on all the socials. We'll share them all. And then also you travel a lot to different shelters. Do you want to talk a little bit about those services that you offer? Cause I don't think everyone knows that there are services like that, so, and you're pretty great at what you do. So
I don't know if a lot of people know this, but I do live out of my RV and it's cats painted all over it. And I travel around and do speaking events. I educate on TNR, community cat care, donate food, and just I travel and do a lot of different fun educational events and fundraising as well. Before the pandemic, I was actually visiting schools and Girl Scout troops and stuff too. So it was pretty amazing. I'm hoping to get back into that soon. But as of now, I'm still traveling. So rescues, shelters, if you're trying to boost up that TNR program, get more people engaged, or if you having trouble with some feral humans, might want to holler at me.
Sterling's your dude. So I like to end the podcast by always asking my guests something that is currently making them happy. This could be cats, of course, but it could be completely unwork related, because having hobbies outside of work is very important, everybody. So currently, Sterling, what is something that is bringing you joy?
Right now, something that is bringing me joy is not just well, I guess it's cat related too, but it's coming out of the pandemic.
Oh, being with
people. All of my Yes, all of my cat people, all of the people that it's being around my tribe again. You, Two Crazy Cat Ladies, Sally, Cowboy Bob, all of the people like that. That energy is like I didn't grow up close to my family, so that's something that makes me extremely happy. Like to see people all come together like that. Yeah, like it's like being at one of the dopest places I've been was the Pride Parade in Atlanta, because it was every time Atlanta's I go, it's so Pride much Parade. Love.
Oh, that's yeah.
Everybody is just love, love, love. It's dope. It's fun. That's how the rescue community feeling lately, coming out of the pandemic. It's like everybody is like, oh man, I haven't seen you in forever. Like I missed you. Like man, I miss being able to just sit and tell somebody. Now look at this picture of my cat. Look at this picture. Look at this picture. Look at this picture. No, look. You didn't see this shirt. You didn't see this hat. Look at this picture. Look at this picture. Like you didn't see a whale.
Human connection is so. I mean, I recently went to VMX, which is a really large vet conference, and oh, dude, I missed fucking people. Oh, that.
Yeah.
Well, wait. Let's not take it in the context I said it. I miss people.
Right.
You guys know what I mean. Sterling's just like, oh no, she did not just say that.
Everybody be like, did y'all hear the new podcast? Oh my goodness,
Tabitha is getting weird. We embrace the weird, but also, and me and Sterling, because we miss each other so much, we are planning an in-person event.
Yeah.
Most likely July or August. Either we're thinking Cleveland or Atlanta. I'm from Cleveland. He's from Atlanta. To be fair, I'm totally down to go to Atlanta. I need more time in Atlanta. But so keep an eye out for that. And I'll share all of Sterling's amazing things he mentioned and his website and his social medias, so you can follow him in the show notes. But thank you for everything you do, Sterling. And thank you for taking the time to hang out with me today.
Thanks for having me. Don't lose cool points for compassion, y'all.
I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. Sterling is one of my favorite people, and we are hopefully going to do some events later this year. So keep an eye out for that, but definitely show Sterling some love, check out his website, and follow him on all the socials. Thanks for listening.